Good morning. My name is Jim Perlman. I'm here on behalf of the Cook County Public Defender's Office and Dan Young. I will be arguing the Miranda issue this morning. If the court has any questions regarding the fitness issue, I'll be glad to answer those, however. In order for there to be a waiver of any constitutional right, that waiver must be knowingly and intelligently rendered. The defendant or the suspect must know the consequences of the rights being abandoned. In order for me to prevail this morning on the habeas claim, I will have to show that there was an unreasonable application of an established Supreme Court principle by the lower courts. The court has said that essentially I have to show that the judgment of the lower courts was objectively unreasonable. Normally, this is a pretty difficult burden for a habeas petitioner to overcome. In this particular case, it does focus our attention, though, on what's critical, and that is the objective forensic findings by the psychologist and the psychiatrist in this case that Dan Young was unable to understand the rights entailed in Miranda and therefore waive them.
If this man had enough comprehension to be able to be fit to stand trial, is there any further issue under Miranda?
Yes. From what I gather, there and based on what Dr. Seltzberg testified.
No, I'm asking a legal question.
Legal, okay.
The Supreme Court held in Godinez against Moran that anybody who has the mental capacity to be tried has the mental capacity to waive every constitutional right, including the right to counsel. Now, given Godinez, is there any further argument, any further available argument about the waiver if this man was fit to stand trial? Much of the argument in your brief seems to be of the form he was fit to stand trial but not fit to waive
Miranda.
And that position was rejected as a matter of law in Godinez against Moran.
I would say, Your Honor, that Godinez probably missed the psychiatric and the medical aspect of this question. And that is that abstract thought of greater there's a requirement for abstract thought that is part and parcel.
I didn't understand that either. I didn't understand your criticism of concrete thinking. Concrete thinking sounds what really one needs in a situation like this. I mean, you're thinking concretely about the consequences for yourself of giving up a right. You're not thinking about, you know, constitutional law and whether Miranda is a proper interpretation of the Fifth Amendment or anything of that sort.
There were,
like the example of the peach and the, I thought that was very odd. What's wrong with saying that what a peach, what was it, a peach and a plum or something? Or?
I think one of the examples was that that concrete thought was that if you ask what is, how are peach and plum related,
right,
someone would say that's something that you eat.
They're
whereas
both fruits, and another person says you bite into them. What's wrong? You bite into them.
Because bite into them is, in fact, a correct answer.
Right.
But it doesn't demonstrate the capacity for abstract thought.
What do you need abstract thought in this situation?
Because Miranda requires some understanding, not only the words, which the testimony here was that Dan did not understand many of the words, right, entail,
etc. He knew a term I didn't know, PD.
Excuse me?
He knew a term I didn't know, PD.
Again, that is a concrete thing. That is
right.
That is
and
a
that's
thing.
What you have to know.
No,
that,
no,
you
that's
know, that, get a public defender.
That, no, that's not what you have to know. What you have to know a little bit about that, but you have to be able to relate one part of Miranda to the other. In other words, you have to be able to.
In that event, a large percentage of first, even second year law students would not be able to waive their rights under Miranda.
Well,
exams show a great deal of trouble relating one part of Miranda to another, and indeed, one might say the Supreme Court itself had a lot of trouble relating Miranda to Escobedo and figuring out under what clause of the Constitution these rights were. It can't be the standard.
I believe, Your Honor, that it is, because if you can't say how having a lawyer is related to your situation, and that's abstract thought, and how that can be of benefit to you, you can't understand Miranda. You can't understand what you're waiting there.
I don't understand why you think that's abstract. Here's another question. Now, he has an IQ of 56?
56, yes.
When was this measured?
The last measurement was done at the time of this case, back in 1990, between 92 and 94. The records of Dan's impoverishment goes as far back as he does. He was diagnosed as retarded from birth.
Well, had he been given the IQ test previously?
It's not clear in the record whether or not he had been, but there's nothing aberrant about the 56. It was never questioned by the state at any point in time.
But you can see why there's a serious problem if you allow IQ tests taken in connection with the litigation to be given legal weight. Nothing would be easier than to fake a low IQ on a test. Just don't answer the question.
That's true. There's no suggestion in this record that Dan was faking.
But the Supreme Court, you know, in its case about executing retarded people, I thought one of the ways in which the majority answered the dissent was by saying that, of course, you would base a judgment of retardation on IQ tests going, you know, through the person's life, not the test he took after he was arrested.
Well again, the testimony from Dr. Seltzer, Dr. Stipe, et cetera, was they had reviewed all of the records of Dan's.
What are those records? Did the records include an IQ score?
I believe that they did, yes, Your Honor. I can't be definitive on that, but...
What was the score?
Again, I don't know what those other scores were, and I would also point out, though...
Well, if they were 80 or 90, that would be make a big difference.
There, I can tell you without fear of contradiction, however, that there was nothing 80 or 90 for Dan at any point in his life. I can tell you that. And of course, IQs are somewhat skewed towards age. By the time Dan took this test, his IQ was 56, which is only 10 points higher than the lowest possible score one could obtain on this test. And again, the state never questioned that. They never questioned whether or not Dan was faking it. And it was manifest to Mike Rogers and one of the police officers that Dan did have comprehension problems because they said so when they testified at trial. So it's quite apparent, and it's always been with Dan.
Wasn't there testimony that he had invoked his Miranda rights sometime 3-4 months before this?
There was testimony that after being read his Miranda rights, he decided not to talk. That is only an inference. There are many reasons why someone wouldn't talk. And again, the settings were different, which was that was a misdemeanor case. The police didn't have the same motivation to come back at Dan and continue with the question. One of the things that is noted about mentally retarded people is their lack of ability to resist authority figures. And so if the police had come back at him, it is quite likely that they would have been able to get him to say just about anything.
He's shown a very great deal of ability to resist authority figures' instructions not to commit further crimes.
Excuse me?
He had shown a very considerable ability to resist authority figures' instructions to commit no further crimes.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not entirely certain how that has a bearing on Miranda. The fact of the matter is that the mental health experts in this case all testified that Dan did not have the capacity to understand Miranda at all, and two of them testified that the way in which Mike Rogers, the assistant state's attorney, read Miranda to Dan and explained Miranda to Dan was inadequate. And the state never challenged these mental health experts on the basis of their medical forensic findings. And Dr. Bloomstein did forensic testing, which was completely corroborative of what their expert opinions were. And that's the essence of the case. The essence of the case is if there is objective stuff in this particular circumstance, the objective things are the findings of the expert. The facts, the fact that he can't tell time on that clock there, the fact that he can't count backwards, even when shown how to do that.
I must say, counting backwards seems extremely remote from anything to do with anything.
It isn't remote in the sense that it shows how undeveloped his mind is. This is an organic thing with someone.
But of course, that brings us back to Judge Easterbrook's question. If his mind is so undeveloped, and if it's so important to be able to count backwards, how can he stand trial?
The answer that the only answer I can give to you is, I guess you can give two answers. Maybe he wasn't fit to stand trial. The second thing is that the testimony from Dr. Selzberg, I believe it was Dr. Selzberg, was that Miranda requires a more advanced mind than fitness. It's simpler to say you're the judge or that's the jury and they decide what you do. It's quite another thing to say that a person understands that they have a right.
What if your lawyer says to you, would you rather have a jury trial or a bench trial? You don't really think your client is capable of making a judgment about that, do you?
I think that what the doctors would say in this case was that if Mr. Greenberg, and he's here today, or if he was, had spent enough time with Dan and explained that to him in very concrete terms, in very simple, basic terms, which is somebody is going to decide if you did this, and that can be the judge, or that can be 12 people. And then you stop and you say, now explain that to me in your own words. So that's much simpler than relating the notion of what a lawyer is, what a lawyer can do for you, what self-incrimination is, and everything else. And my white light is on. And that's the essence. If I were disposed towards granting the writ in this case, I think what I would say is this man is at the bottom and he has no capacity for abstract thought. And because of that, because of the unqualified testimony of the people who know most about how a mind works, the lower courts made a mistake. It was objectively unreasonable.
Okay, thank you, Pearl. Mr. Weaver?
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning. My name is Lionel Weaver. I'm with the Attorney General's Office, appearing on behalf of
the respondent in this case. Petitioner has argued that due to his limited mental capacities, he was unable to understand and therefore waive his Miranda rights. Petitioner, however, has failed to demonstrate that the state court's adjudication of this claim was an unreasonable application of federal law. As this is a habeas case, the standard of review is de novo. However, this court has indicated that in reviewing claims under the unreasonable application prong, it will defer to any reasonable state court decision. The inquiry is whether or not that analysis was at least minimally consistent with the facts and circumstances of the particular case. In this case, the governing standard is the totality of the circumstances test. In other words, the state court must consider all the relevant factors and circumstances in determining whether or not a waiver was knowingly and intelligently made. It is respondent's position that the Illinois Appellate Court's application of this standard was entirely reasonable. The court clearly set forth the appropriate test and then proceeded to discuss several historical facts which are presumed correct on habeas review. The court noted the testimony at length of Assistant State's Attorney Rogers, who testified that he gave petitioners simplified, broken-down Miranda warnings. In fact, he asked him to explain those warnings after each warning was given, and each time petitioner indicated in some way that he understood. The court also noted the testimony of the arresting officers in this case. They too testified that they gave Miranda warnings and that petitioner was able to, in their opinion, understand those warnings. The court also discussed the fact that petitioner had 11 arrests, which showed his ample experience with the criminal justice system, and in fact showed that he had repeatedly been given Miranda warnings. Finally, the court noted the testimony of Officer Barkowitz, who testified about an incident in January in 1992, which was just 1 month prior to petitioner gave his confession in this case. Officer Barkowitz testified that he was called to the scene of a crime where a woman had alleged that petitioner had pushed her down a flight of stairs. Upon arriving, petitioner immediately stated to the officer that the woman had actually slipped and fallen down the stairs. He was then given his Miranda warnings and asked if he wanted to discuss the incident any further. At that point, he expressly declined. The court did acknowledge that three doctors testified that he was unable to understand and therefore waive his Miranda rights. However, the court also properly recognized that a trial court has the discretion to reject expert testimony and rely solely on that of lay witness testimony. Further, the court indicated that petitioner's responses to the Miranda warnings, although basic, actually discredited the conclusion that he was unable to understand those warnings. Moreover, the court indicated that the expert testimony actually supported a finding of waiver. Dr. Seltzberg testified that petitioner, in fact, understood that incriminating statements could be used against him in court. Moreover, Dr. Stice testified that, in his opinion, Young could understand simplified Miranda warnings. Petitioner's argument ultimately just attacked...
I'm not sure I understand the concept of a simplified Miranda warning. How could the warning be any more simple than... If you don't want to talk, we have to stop asking questions. And if you do want a lawyer, one will be appointed for you. What's a simple version of that?
I would certainly agree with that position that the warnings themselves...
No, could you just explain to me what is, in your view, a simple version of that advice?
I think...
It doesn't seem reducible to anything simpler.
Well, I think perhaps we could look at the testimony of Assistant State's Attorney Rogers, which was actually quoted at length in the appellate court opinion. Rather than say you have a right to remain silent, he broke it down and said you have a right not to talk to me. You don't have to talk to me. So to that extent, I suppose that it is somewhat reducible. However, I'm unaware of any case law which would suggest that it does in fact have to be reducible. Ultimately, petitioner's argument attacks the credibility determination made by the state court in this case. Miranda waiver claims, however, ultimately demand an assessment of credibility that only the trier of fact can make. The appellate court properly recognized this significant principle when it noted that the trial court made a credibility determination, apparently finding the state's witnesses more credible. Respondent further submits that this determination must not be disturbed on habeas review. Petitioner, again, has failed to demonstrate that the state court analysis was an unreasonable application of federal law. His argument rests on basically testimony from the doctors in this case who said he is unable to understand his Miranda warnings. That, however, was expressly rejected by the trial court, affirmed by the appellate court, that, in fact, he could understand the warnings. That is a historical fact which is presumed correct on habeas review.
Let me ask, before you sit down here, there may not be, I guess as I see it, a lot of legal traction on these issues that are raised by Mr. Perlman, but this seems to be really a shaky case on the facts and the confession. Has anybody ever taken another look at this case? I mean, you got this Williams fella confessing, and turned out he was in jail at the time. I think Young's confession is full of inconsistencies, whether kerosene was put on the body. No question this is a terrible crime, but has anybody ever taken a look at whether the right guy has been convicted here?
In a sense that has a court taken a look at this, certainly it went up on direct review. It was reviewed by the appellate court. It also went to...
We're not going to be concerned with ultimate guilt or innocence here. We have the legal questions that we have to
resolve,
but it just seems to be such a case that at least gave me a lot of concern when I was looking it over. This detective that took the confession had some problems with other confessions, other cases that were thrown out. We know that Illinois has reexamined a number of cases and found problems. Has this case been subject to any kind of analysis like that by the AG's office or anything?
My understanding, actually, is that a post-conviction petition was raised in the state court system by petitioner, which introduced what was newly discovered DNA evidence. That petition was actually dismissed as patently without merit, and that dismissal was recently affirmed by the appellate court. So, yes, in fact, this case has been looked at again. It's not a shaky case by any means. Following counsel's lead, I will similarly limit my argument to the Miranda issue and will conclude at this point unless the court has further questions.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Perlman, how much time do we have? A minute?
Okay. Judge Evans, Mr. Weaver is correct. The petition for post-conviction relief was dismissed. They gave us the opportunity to file other collateral remedies on behalf of Mr. Young, and those have been filed. The fact of the matter is, though, that this confession shows why it is very difficult for someone like Dan Young to waive his Miranda, because it is a false confession, because the will can be overborne so easily by someone who is mentally retarded. If this court, on this particular record, I'm not asking this court to set a number of IQ, that this above this, okay, below this, not okay. I'm simply saying, based on the voluminous testimony, the facts of this case, that this man is so mentally impoverished that he cannot waive his Miranda rights, and that is the bottom. I'm not asking for the top, I'm just asking for the bottom. The court doesn't give us the bottom in this case. It's setting a very dangerous precedent. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Farr. Thank you to both counsel, and thank you, Ms. Charlotte, to the Defender's Office for taking on this case. Next case for argument.